There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey, real quick reminder, we will be on Radio Row next week thanks to Flight by Yingling. The folks at Flight by Yingling had a few Flight by Yinglings with my guy Mike from Yingling yesterday. I'm driving around, Seth, right now with literally 20 cases of Flight by Yingling in the back seat of my truck. Supplies for our Airbnb next week.
Is that do we just be sure there's not any stretches where we're going to get hot weather here anytime soon?
We're not. I've checked. Well, I'll bring them inside if that's the case. I'm not going to leave beer to be warm in the back of my car. I've got it under control.
Okay.
I'm excited. The Yingling people are excited about it. It's all good. We'll have a lot of cold beer, and we thank the Low T Center as well, our supporting sponsor, who is they're also sending us to Radio Row Exclusive Furniture, sponsoring our hot seat where we'll be talking to all of our guests, and of course Mokarem Injury Lawyers. They will be sponsoring the live stream, which will be on YouTube and Twitch once again.
And listen, I know a few of our listeners, I feel like they just started listening to sports radio again this year, because we've had a few people complain about basically the way Radio Row was done 15 years ago. Uh-huh. Sean and I don't have like interview after interview of people you've never heard about on there. We're very limited in that. We accept the interviews that are actually ones we're excited about. So it's not going to be some 70-year-old guy that you don't remember doing 5 minutes talking about the doctor that did his hip replacement as a plug. All right?
Yes. Yeah. I understand people's trepidation, but you're absolutely right. If you listen,
we haven't done it like that in a long, long time.
In a long time. Yeah. So we're excited, man. Should be fun. This is a Super Bowl that I'm looking forward to watching, but I'm not real jazzed up about either team. They're both great teams. Obviously, they're in the Super Bowl, but if you're going to root for one side or the other in this Super Bowl and you're not a fan of either of those teams, there probably is a lot of bargaining that goes on with yourself.
Really? Do people hate the Eagles that much? I'm full bore into the Eagles on this one. All about it.
I think Philadelphia fans are deplorable people. They're awful. Yeah. They're awful people, and I don't want good things. And I say that with my mom's whole side of the family being from Philadelphia.
They're all awful people.
They're awful sports people. Now, my relatives, they're fine people. They've treated me well through the years and everything. But by and large, the people that I watch, you know, like literally people walking up to Washington fans after the game and yanking their hats off their head and running away with it. Yeah. Filming Washington fans walking out and taunting them and cursing at them and whatnot.
Yeah,
the legions of people in the street that are shimmying up poles and you know, destroying property and whatnot.
Talking smack to Mattress Mac.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Okay.
The one to Verlander's wife there, that was actually more playful, it turned out. They basically requested that she flip him off because Verlander had that fun one. Maybe that's what softened me with Phillies fans. Was it the Verlanders actually had fun with it?
Yeah.
Remember, Verland flipped them off, and they thought it was the coolest thing ever. Like, that's That's a little window into the way a Philadelphia sports fan operates. They respected the hell out of Verlander for actually flipping him off.
No, they're self-aware.
It was endearing to them.
They're self-aware. They know that they're bad people. You know, like I think they lean into it.
My favorite Philly moment was when I got mooned by one like 13-year-old boy, and then flipped off by the other one as their father stood next to them, proudly cheering them on. He'd never been a more proud the bus went into the locker room there in Philadelphia.
Start him young.
My God, yeah.
Now, I'm looking at the TV in our studio, and Jalen Hurts is up on the screen, and I like Jalen Hurts, so that makes it easier to root for Philly. I'm rooting for Philly in this. I do not want the three-peat. With all due respect to, who was it, Maggie, this morning on the show before ours, saying people want to see greatness. People want to see what they want to see, and I want to see the Chiefs lose this game. I do not want to see the three-peat.
Ask your do a Pender poll today. Like, are you genuinely interested in watching a team be a? Do you want
the three-peat.
Chiefs to win because of the three-peat, yeah. Or do you not care about the three-peat?
Got it.
I'll be astounded. I'll be astounded if fewer than 80% say they don't want to see a three-peat.
I'm 100% with you on that.
Maybe that's the best question. Do you want to see a three-peat or don't you?
Right, right. Okay.
Because then you're witnessing greatness. As if there's no other opportunities to witness greatness.
Right. People want to see greatness. I'm like, people want to see what they want to see. I want to see greatness at times if I like the people that are achieving the greatness. If I like the team that is achieving the greatness. Like if I don't like that team, then I don't want to see them achieve greatness.
Let's boil it down to this.
Yeah.
If the Chiefs were to win, should a reporter ask one of the Eagles players, boy, is there a part of you that just feel lucky to have been on the field as the Chiefs greatness. Achieved greatness? Are you, like, apparently all other sports fans more interested in than anything else in watching the Chiefs achieve greatness? So you must have loved being out here and losing. They could go up in whichever tight end this week is the one that drops game winning or game tying.
I'm going to tell you I'm going to tell you right now. Like you've been to the Super Bowl many times, like I have as a media member. The span of reporter that is covering the Super Bowl is vast. It's wide.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, they're all over from the non-sports world.
World, or just there's good reporters and there's bad reporters and there's silly questions and there's this and that. Now, the silliest questions come on opening night, on media night.
Yeah.
But you're talking about like after the game. I would be willing to guarantee you that if the Eagles were to lose this game, that there would be some sort of question about, does it dull the sting of losing that you're losing to a team that just three-peated for the first time ever? Like some question like that.
Right, yeah.
Where the Eagle player, I mean, you're the former player here. I would guess if I was a player and I got that question, I would be ready to strangle that reporter. Like, does it dull the sting of losing? No.
What the hell are you talking about? Right. What do I care about what this looks like in the sports almanac 20 years from
that's
now?
That's right. That's right.
Hey, when this comes up in baseball is when somebody breaks a record and, like, they were the pitcher that was pitching to whomever when they had a consecutive win streak or something. Pitchers tend to be pretty cool about that stuff, but that's like a one-off in a moment where it's a regular season game or what have you. It's not after the World Series.
Right.
It's not. Yeah, boy, I'm just glad I could be the pitcher that allowed this guy to be the hero. Sure, yes. I get to be remembered throughout history as that guy.
Hey, Acevedo, how do you like being shown on the anniversary of Yordan Alvarez's home run every year against the Phillies? How does that feel? How does it make you? How do you like the attention that you're getting? All right. I thought it'd be fun to look back at the Texans season. We won't get to do that very much anymore. Just ended a week and a half ago. But the best plays from the season for the Texans. Best four plays. I'm doing four so that I can put up a poll for this as well and let you people vote on it. I picked the four. So I may have missed one here. If I missed one, text in 713-572-4610. I've got what in my mind, Seth, were the four best / most significant, you know, however I couched it, plays, offensive plays. And I will tell you, part of the part of this exercise was very depressing going through and like trying to find a gaggle of offensive plays to pick from here that would qualify for something. You know, the, Joe Mixon had a lot of like nice runs this year. Yeah, but he had a 59-yard run against the Patriots that got them down to the 20 or something like that. Generally, that doesn't qualify for something like a poll like this. But it was going through the offensive part of it. You really felt acutely why the team is looking for a new offensive coordinator right now. There was there's not a lot of great in the offense this year.
You know? The first one that you've got on here is interesting because I feel like we saw it at the very beginning of the season, and then we saw it again in the playoffs, but not nearly as much in between this type of catch from Nico Collins.
Yep, from Nico Collins. This was week one. Texans have the ball. They're up at the end of the game. They're up two, and they do not want to give the ball back to the Colts. It's 29-27. It's 3rd and 11, and the crowd is going insane at this point in Indianapolis. Here's what it sounded like.
3rd down and 11 from the Houston 29-yard line. C.J. Stroud, shotgun. Dare to his right. Dell in motion to the left. Crowd deafening. Here's the snap. C.J. looking, firing right sideline, and Nico Collins with the catch. He gets the feet down for a first down at the 41-yard line.
Okay, and Andre Ware was about to go insane right there. And people may be listening and going, really? Like, this is the four best plays, a third down conversion in week one. You got to remember, go back and watch the throw. B, go back and watch the catch and watch Nico get his feet down. C, at that point in week one in the season, we thought the Colts were going to be like right there. And you know, to be fair, they finished 2nd in the division. But we, you know, there's a chance we thought it might be that's the battle in the division. Like, that was the most important game on the schedule because it was the road game against the 2nd best team in the division.
Well, in that kind of throw to Nico Collins and Tank Dell in 2023 were some of the most impressive throws all season long. And they came pretty regularly. Man, this pinpoint accuracy to a guy who looks like he's covered on the sidelines, and in real time, it doesn't look like it could possibly be a catch. Then you watch it in slow motion, and there's no doubt. That was what... it was in week one of the season. You think, okay, it's going to be business as usual. Here we go.
Yep.
And then they had a similar throw and catch like that in the Kansas City game, which was really nice to see, but it just... It wasn't a reliable staple the same way it had been last year for so much of the season.
Got to get back to that, man.
And part of it, too, in all of the discussion about Bobby Slowick and everything, I don't want to forget that, man, there were broad stretches of time this season where CJ just didn't look as accurate as he usually is or was. And the fact that he looked as good as he did in the playoffs in terms of accuracy, I think that I'm more comfortable thinking that there were some injuries involved there. And, you know, I know CJ alluded to it towards the end of the year, but guys don't just go from being accurate to all of a sudden not accurate.
Agreed.
The injuries are really the only realistic explanation, even with or without pass rush or pass pressure. I mean, I think the pass pressure definitely affected CJ's decision-making process and some of the way he operated in the pocket. But when it comes down to the throws themselves and when he had time to throw, there were just way more errant throws. Sometimes egregiously errant than we'd ever seen out of CJ before. So hopefully that was injuries, and hopefully if they can fix the pass protection, that's not as much of an issue this year.
That would be great. All right, so that's number one. Number two candidate, Dare Gumbawale. Week four, drive at the end of the game. The Texans go on a length of the field drive to win the game.
Offset eye, CJ rolls out to the right, throws to the end zone, hits Dare, and the Texans score. They lead. C.J. Stroud to Dare Ogunbowale, who's had a huge game, puts the Texans on top.
Yeah, that was... People forget. I say people forget. Maybe you didn't forget. But I had to be reminded just now with Mark saying, Dare Ogunbowale, a huge game. Like, he had some big third down conversions. That was one of the games where they didn't have Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon was out for that game. So that was... And that was almost... Seth, that was kind of the last we saw for a long time of sort of that end of game, make a drive. You just know CJ's going to make plays to get you that game-winning score. I know the next week they beat Buffalo on that 59-yard field goal, but you know that was they didn't do anything in the second half of that game other than that 59-yard field goal at the end of the game. That was sort of the last time for a long time that we saw CJ engineer like clutch plays at the end of games here.
I think that, well, Dare is a receiver was promising there for a little while, yeah. And they were getting into a nice little rhythm where at times they'd have him as an option on a quick outlet, or on a wheel route or something, and it looked really good. Teams picked it up and adjusted to it. I think the one thing with the next offensive coordinator that I hope improves as well is the running back pass protection, the actual pass blocking. You look at Saquon Barkley in that game this last weekend. Boy, he had a couple of beautiful blocks. Dude. He had one hold he got away with, but he also just had a couple where he smothered dudes.
Yes.
Where at the end of that Chiefs game, those blitzers, even if they got kind of blocked, there were a couple times where they could have leg-whipped CJ if he hadn't gotten out of the pocket. Mm-hmm. So that's where there were times where even where they're, okay, they're technically blocked up or slowed down, but that is a way more compressed pocket than it needs to be. The running back pass protection, nobody likes talking about it. But it was a factor this year. It was one of the sum total. The pass protection, it wasn't just the offensive line. It was the tight ends. It was the running backs. It was everything.
Yep, it was everybody. All right, so that's number two, the Dare game-winning catch against Jacksonville. Fast forward to week 18. That's how the rest of the season went offensively in my mind. I do this almost symbolically because it did feel that way for all like the rest of the year, like the offense was stuck in mud.
So we go to the end of the season, an absolutely meaningless game versus Tennessee, except one where the Tennessee starters were still playing on defense.
Oh, yeah. This is the first half, man. This made it 14-0. Plus, we love Damian Pierce. This is Damian Pierce, 92 yards to the house.
Davis. Feeds Pierce through a hole, 15, 20. He's gone! 40, 50, the 40 of Tennessee, the 30. Will he be caught? The 10, 5, rock and roll! Damian Pierce, coast to coast.
Wow, like he was shot out of a cannon.
Do you think that Mark was nervous that he said he's gone a little too early? Because the guys were catching up to Pierce at the end there.
Yeah,
he said he's gone. He goes, he's gone. The 40, the 50, the 40.
He had defensive backs in pursuit.
Yeah,
and that's where we realized though they did as he put it. He said the Hellcat had a flat or blew a tire.
He blew a tire, something like that. Yeah,
he said it in the post game very entertainingly.
Yeah,
I think that it was good to see a well blocked play where the running back had a hole and only had to beat one guy and then was off to the races. So that was nice to see. It was a little bit of the beginning of what we would see in the playoffs, which is, all right, this offensive line, when they just, they can get movement. They started mashing people a little bit. There was some hope for the future, perhaps, if they change up the play calling a little bit. Maybe if they go to more of a power-based attack instead of an outside zone-based scheme with the next coordinator, you might have something here, but then also, okay, Damian Pierce, maybe we see the rookie version of Damian Pierce with a different offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And with the play calling a little bit different. Because he looked way faster than I remember from his rookie year.
Yeah. And all that said, I realized two of the four highlights are going to end up being Dare Kumbawale and Damian Pierce, backup running backs. I didn't realize that as I was putting this together. And yet I would tell you, like, they need to find more talent at running back in this offseason.
Right. Cody Stutes is at the Senior Bowl, and he had mentioned the only guy that he was watching Nick and Kasaria or Nick and D'Amico all day long, and he said the only thing there was only one guy.
He was just watching the Texans GM and the Texans head coach while he was at the Senior Bowl.
Had his binoculars trained on him the whole time.
It sounded
trying
like
to lip read. Yeah. No, Cody was watching the prospects as well, but he said the only time he really noticed Nick and D'Amico really examining one guy and doing some hand gestures was when they were watching a running back. I forget who it was. So for whatever that's worth, Cody was not presenting that like it's breaking news or anything.
Right.
It was just what he picked up from watching them.
I
don't know. It's, you know, the backup running back position, you know, as multiple people pointed out when I was kind of just wondering what they were doing with Damian Pierce during training camp, most teams, it's awesome if you do have a 1-2 punch. Most teams don't have their backup running back play all that much, but it's nice if you're in a situation like Detroit where you've got two running backs that can be an absolute pain in the butt. And Joe Mixon's going to be 1 year older after heavy usage this year. I 100% would love to see somebody come in that could either end up being the successor or be a part of a combo or whatever it might be and provide some competition at the very least during training camp.
Yeah, like I'm assuming that they're going to bring in an offensive coordinator that is more creative and more innovative than Bobby Slowick was this year, where Bobby Slowick just, it felt like, kept doing the same things over and over again. Like if it's Chip Kelly – you know, someone like that. And yeah. I'm like, I don't want just Joe Mixon. You get a couple other talented running backs back there that have a little wiggle to them and right. a pass-catching element to them.
Yeah.
And a creative offensive coordinator could have a field day with that.
But I guess, though, that's what either Chip Kelly or Nick Cayley or any of these other guys that they've interviewed, Jeff Nixon. You know, Jeff Nixon didn't run the ball a lot, but he's the Syracuse offensive coordinator who interviewed with the Texans. They didn't run much at all, but they used their running backs. They had their running back had 1,500 yards of all-purpose yardage. Like they use the running back. It's just not always in the running game. So yeah, I think their evaluation of Damian Pierce would be really interesting because they're going to want to look at Damian and look at where he struggled in this previous scheme, and then obviously watch the good runs from this year and then from his rookie year and wonder, all right, can we? Is that version of Damian Pierce, is that still the same guy?
Yep. Well, we know he's going to get, Damian's going to get the benefit of the doubt from D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio. They really like him. And so if a new OC comes in and sees some things they can do with Damian Pierce. Look, the big thing for Damian Pierce was that he couldn't get his head wrapped around the Kupchanistani system. Like he wasn't comfortable in it. Damian Pierce might be a guy, Seth, that if they come in and run something different, could look like he did back in 2022 again.
Right.
Like the skill set is still there, you know? Yeah.
Now, you know, like just by way of illustration, LaQuint Allen was the running back for Syracuse.
Yeah.
He led the NCAA in catches for running backs.
There you go.
And I don't think Damian's going to be that guy.
Okay.
So if it were hypothetically Jeff Nixon, if they hire Jeff Nixon, I think then you start looking at, okay, they'll probably take a running back in the second or third round.
Could be that guy. I mean, Jeff Nixon was his OC, you know?
Yeah.
So there you go. All right. Boy, that's interesting. So that's the guy they got excited about, Cody said, huh?
No, not LaQuint Allen, a running back.
Oh, a running back.
I was talking about Syracuse's running back last year.
Oh, okay. I thought you were looking up the guy that I thought you were looking up Cody's list of who Nick and D'Amico got excited about at the Senior Bowl.
I'll tell you who that was. Let me control F this.
Okay.
Oh, it was Devin Neal, Kansas running back Devin Neal.
Okay, there you go. All right.
He didn't say they got excited about it. He said they seemed to pay a little bit more attention to Devin Neal.
Okay.
That was a guess based, this is a quote from him, that's just a guess based on gestures and their eyes during Neal's rep.
Okay, well, I just changed my entire big board based on that, so Devin Neal, first round pick. All right, the last one. We're doing the four best plays. And talking off of these, this is kind of fun. So we got Nico's 3rd-and-11 catch late in the Indy game. We got Dari Gumbawale's game-winning touchdown against Jacksonville. We just had Damian Pierce shot out of a cannon against the Tennessee Titans. And then the playoff.
By the way, when he said Damian Pierce shot out of a cannon, I envisioned it like at a circus.
The helmet.
Because Damian's kind of short, too.
Yeah.
So, like, him wearing, like, a wrestling singlet.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple of babes in leotards helping stuff him into the thing.
Yeah. Goggles. Yeah. And Damian would be all about it.
He'd totally do it.
He was... If Damian went to a circus or a ratchet carnival where they're like, hey, we're going to give $100 to a guy if we let him shoot him out of a cannon,
dude,
Damian would volunteer.
Damian, going with Damian Pierce to the carnival at the livestock show and rodeo would be the funnest thing ever. I think he would stop at
commentary.
He would stop at every single game and play it. Like, oh, you're going to guess my weight? Let's go. I'm going to get on the scale. Let's guess my weight.
Damian would be really good at food reaction videos, too, I think. So... Likewise, at the rodeo carnival, through all the different food vendors and everything.
Damian eating like fried Twinkies and turkey legs and whatnot would be tremendous.
No, I don't want to. As long as he's an active running back for the Texans, I don't want that because he does have that little gymnast body that would it blows up. Pretty
it would pack
quickly,
it on. Yeah,
the Maurice. I don't want him looking like current Maurice Jones-Drew.
That's where it goes. All right, last
Maurice
one.
Jones Drew looks kind of like a carnival barker.
He definitely looks like someone who walks around the carnival and eats all...
Smoking a cigar, or he runs the carnival. He's got a white suit on, and he's got smoking
a
cigar.
Yeah. All right, last one, playoffs. This was the play that unlocked C.J. Stroud in the Charger game.
Stroud calls for the ball. And the ball goes through Stroud. He picks it up. Scrambles out to the right side. Can he get rid of it? Airs it out downfield and caught at the 45-yard line and taken to the 50-yard line. X marks the spot. An amazing play for the Texans on 3rd-and-long. Stroud dropped the ball, but he picked it up and found Xavier Hutchinson for a first down at midfield as we hit the two-minute warning. 33 yards, the Texans in business, down 6-0.
I love that play, A, because of Stroud's improvisational ability there. It was really good. But then also, it was just such a perfect illustration of sometimes how busted plays. A busted play is sometimes the best play because it takes the defense out of their rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see it on that play. You know, the defensive backs, they were good about realizing that it was a botched play, and they tried too hard to stay disciplined because they kind of realized, like, oh, crap, what's going on? And they all got super deep. And that gave Xavier Hutchinson this gaping wide chasm open to run into,
yeah.
And he was wide open. It was probably the easiest catch Xavier Hutchinson had all season long, and it, because it was a busted play at the beginning. It's like when there's a muffed punt, but the returner picks it up, you know, in stride, and all of a sudden everything's all screwed up. It felt like that.
Yeah, yeah, and that and the Texans had done nothing in that game to that point, like nothing. It was 7-0, or 6-0, I should say. I mean, they literally had done nothing on the scoreboard. But if you look at the stats in that game, like they had like 70 or 80 yards of offense total at that point.
It was a mistake. A potential disaster, because you're looking at that point either a safety or a touchdown.
Oh, yeah.
You're down in your own territory. You're on your 11-yard line, was it?
Yeah.
And yeah. The ball's skipping towards the end zone. That could have been really, really, really ugly. And it turned into not just a good play, but it really did feel like almost it was like a slap upside the head. That, oh, okay, yeah, let's just go play football for mm-hmm. CJ.
Yeah.
You know, don't make it any more difficult than it has to be. We're just going to go play football.
Yep, for sure. All right, so those are the four plays. The Nico 3rd-and-11 catch against the Colts, Dare game-winning touchdown, Jacksonville, Pierce 92-yard run, Tennessee, and then the Hutch catch versus the Chargers. I'll put the poll up momentarily. It's a lot of typing to do while I'm talking to my friend Seth on the radio, so I'll put that up shortly.
As we're struggling with technical difficulties.
My social media, yeah.
That's why I was so moody in the first, in the 6 a.m.
Oh, you're fine. Yeah, you're fine.
I was a little distracted. Ben and I are trying to work something out.
That's okay. And Ben seems okay, too. So the Texans are interviewing Nick Caley tomorrow as we come off of the four best offensive plays of the year, where there was a big 14-week chasm with none of them in my mind. They're interviewing Nick Caley tomorrow. Thad Lewis interviewed for the job. The Drive yesterday was talking about this, and I think it's Tyler at the end of this cut, made an interesting connection. Is there any merit to the hypothesis that Tyler Milner has in this bit of Drive audio here?
I want to find a few guys that aren't qualified to be head coaches. Hell, that really aren't qualified to be offensive coordinators, whatever the qualifications are, right? And down the road, hey, man, like Eric Bieniemy. He's on the streets right now, isn't he? I'm sure he's probably a consultant somewhere if he wanted to be. But like,
yeah, he's interviewing
like,
for jobs.
I want to meet with Eric Bieniemy because, I don't know Eric Bieniemy personally. But I'd be willing to bet you that it would be tremendous to have him as a position coach if he were willing to take that job, if he didn't get offered an offensive coordinator job, to have him in some role on this team. I would imagine
running backs coach
something.
Maybe they're being sneaky and they're putting together the OC to be Chip Kelly's staff underneath him, because the OC out of Syracuse they interviewed yesterday had ties to Chip Kelly. Thad Lewis has ties to Chip Kelly.
But then you get into these guys, though, T, for me, like the OC at Syracuse. Like, why would he leave Syracuse as an OC job? Those guys are making, I mean, I bet he's making damn near $1 million as a play caller in college. And why would he come down? But your point, I think, is valid, just not about that guy, right? I mean, like, I do think there's some, you know, like Thad. Like
would he leave Tampa as a quarterback?
To come work
coach
with C.J. Stroud.
All right, so the theory those guys were putting out, well, Tyler was just flat out saying, I wonder if they're getting Chip Kelly's staff together for him. I think that might be, it's a fun hypothesis. It's probably a reach. But are they getting guys in the building? Is some of doing the interviewing here kind of like building up your
your
database? You know, what I mean?
If ultimately the guy that you really want is Chip Kelly. So there's a whole, I feel worse and worse. I feel like unethical even talking about Chip Kelly as a serious option the more we get deeper into interviews and there's been no actual connection there. So I feel like it's almost a disservice to keep putting that out there as an option. So we don't have really any legitimate reason to think that that's somewhere the Texans are going. But they are starting to do more interviews. I'm not as worried about the pace of interviews as some people, just because of where they are right now. They're at the Senior Bowl. They could interview 20 coordinators an hour if they wanted to at the Senior Bowl. Everybody's out there mm-hmm. having conversations and all of that. So I'm not overly worried about it. I'd like there to be some clarity on it by the end of next week, certainly. But I don't know. As far as the point, that was a good point Clint made about Thad Lewis and his salary. He makes $750,000 a year at Syracuse.
Oh, Jeff Nixon.
Or Jeff Nixon, yeah. Sorry. What did I say? Oh, yeah. Jeff Nixon makes $750,000 a year. I think the average assistant coach in the NFL makes about $400,000. So I'm sure there's a lot of, if he were to be a position coach for Chip Kelly, I'm sure there's a lot of quarterback coaches and whatnot that make, you know, near $700,000, also hop into the NFL, kind of like when Bill O'Brien went to New England. I mean, Bill O'Brien took, what did he say? It was like he was making 25% of what he did as a college OC to go take a job in New England as an assistant coach. I think if Jeff Nixon ultimately really wants to get into the NFL, I could see that being a move that you might take a little less pay, but your eye is towards an NFL future.
Yeah, you're making an investment in yourself. I always respected that about Bill O'Brien. Like he had his eye on the prize. He knew what he wanted to be, and he realized that he might have to pay the price to go do it, and he did. And that's So we'll see what happens. Jeff Nixon, Thad Lewis. So far, three interviews: Gerard Johnson, Jeff Nixon, Thad Lewis. That we know of, three interviews. Like you said, there's probably casual conversations going on all over.
They're
the going
to have one with Nick Cayley
tomorrow.
Who's currently a quarterback's coach with the Rams. And before anybody worries about Kubshanistan, he spent almost a decade with New England before that.
Yes, so 2015 through 2020, he was in the building with Caserio there. So they crossed over
with Caserio, and then he was still there for another couple years after that.
Yep.
So he's had experience in, you know, multiple or at least two different schemes in with multiple different coordinators. So I guess I start to wonder with those guys sometimes, like, all right, then how come he's never been a passing? This last year he was the pass game coordinator.
Okay.
But it wasn't until now that,
So was Bobby.
right. And he was the passing game coordinator under Sean McVay.
Yeah.
Now, you could say the same thing about Mike McDaniel.
Yeah.
You could say the same thing about various other guys out there. And that's where the crapshoot element is always going to be strong, unless you're getting a guy like Mike McCarthy or like Chip Kelly or somebody else like that that's, you know, got a long track record as an actual play caller.
Yeah, just in terms of public perception, it's just the fact of the matter is the more that somebody's background looks like Bobby Slowick's background, the more people are going to be inclined to want new or want, you know, people always want new. They want different, especially when whatever it was previously didn't succeed. So this is, it's interesting because Nick and D'Amico are both in Mobile, Alabama at the Senior Bowl. That was, like, they've got an OC position. If I may, I guess they can accomplish a lot of this over Zoom, or maybe some of the guys are even there, you know, that are that
right.
They
that was the point I was making is that they're pretty much the whole league is there. It's ripe with networking opportunities.
Yeah. So, Peyton Pendergast with you. The Saints job is still the only one that's open right now. Mike McCarthy pulled himself out of that mix yesterday. There were some rumors floating around that the McCarthy Saints vibe wasn't all that great. Now, he was the odds-on favorite yesterday to get before he pulled himself out of the mix. He was minus 300 to get the job. It looks like it's Kellen Moore's job now in New Orleans. Here's Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network earlier this week on the New England opening.
Mike McCarthy, I'm told, is expected to interview with the Saints probably around the middle of this week. He's got a lot of familiarity with that organization, and GM Mickey Loomis was the offensive coordinator there a couple of decades ago. He's also got a lot of success in his past, 12 playoff appearances in 18 seasons, potentially a really good fit for a Saints team that is very much built to win right now. The Saints also plan to speak again with Eagles offensive coordinator Kellen Moore. They are allowed under the rules to speak with Moore, win or lose for the Eagles today, but the result of this game could impact the timing. The Saints ideally want to speak with Moore as soon as possible, could head to Philadelphia even to speak with him as soon as Monday. They've already spoken twice with Mike Kafka and Anthony Weaver for the job. They still want to talk with Cliff Kingsbury, and I would not count out their interim coach, Darren Rizzi, either.
Those are all the guys on the odds board. That audio is obviously a little old. It's from the day of the NFC title game. Yeah. We know how that went. And so they're having to, the Saints are having to accommodate Kellen Moore by going to him as opposed to them, him coming to them.
You know, as of right now, the Saints have the least cap space in the league. They're currently $54 million over the cap.
That's why this job is so unattractive, I think.
Well, it does get better. I mean, they've been doing this for a couple of years, kind of unwinding themselves from the Drew Brees era and all of that. They are, by next year, it's not as bad. They're still one of the teams that are most up against the cap in 2026. But by 2027, they're right in the road in the middle of the cap. So, I mean, they could start getting aggressive in terms of pushing things off like reasonably into the future. They're going to have to this year already. This year will probably be the last really ugly, uncomfortable year, I think. I'd have to defer to guys like Texans cap on that.
Yeah.
But you are, as a coach, entering it knowing that you're still in the middle of the lean years, and you'd love to believe an owner when he tells you, hey, you're going to have time. We understand the situation. Man, it doesn't always play out that way. If you end up going 3-14 in year one, your leash gets a lot shorter. So I could see why people are reluctant to take that job.
Yeah.
I think by way of the Texans, by the way, the Texans right now have after a really heavy year of free agency spending last year, they still have, in 2025, they have the sixth most space, if I'm reading it correctly.
Okay.
So
that sounds different than what I've been hearing.
I'm wrong. I'm completely wrong on that. I take it all back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll defer to Texans cap. He listens.
Yeah. Don't start. I'm not allowed to look at stats like this.
Right.
Yeah.
So I do think the Saints job would be one that, like, let's pretend Ben Johnson were in his first or second year on the market as a head coach.
Yeah.
This would be one of those jobs he would say no thanks to. Ben Johnson, who's now the Bears coach, who was notably choosy on taking jobs, I think that would be one. That would be one if I were a choosy candidate. I would not choose that job. I think Anthony Weaver's an interesting one. He's interviewed there twice. I bet he interviewed phenomenally. He's a guy who's got a very big presence about him. And I wonder if they offered the job to Weaver, I would guess he would take it because Anthony Weaver knows kind of how the whole arc goes with a cut. Like, he was one of the rising stars, and he got handed a defense with the Texans that the front office decided to not do anything in free agency or the draft with for a year.
Right.
And I thought Weaver got kind of victimized by the roster that he was handed in his 1 year as a DC. So Weaver has kind of seen the best and the worst of what a career arc looks like. And I would guess if he got offered that New Orleans job, he'd probably take it.
He might take it, yeah. And I think his wife, as much as this might matter, his wife's, I believe, from Houston.
She is.
However that factors into it, it might make him a little bit more open to it.
They moved all over the place, though.
Yeah, right. But it's a factor sometimes. Yeah. You know, if you're trying to talk yourself into something, Sean.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
If it's the best NFL job in the world and it's the new franchise in Tokyo, your extended family can go bleep off. You're taking that job. But, yeah, if it's a job that you're not quite sure about, but, hey, we're close to home and everything.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. It might nudge you towards that. I get that. Hey, if you want to get to Vegas for the college basketball tournament in March with an extra $5,000 in your pocket and the pocket of three of your friends, then just stay tuned here on the Odyssey app to Sports Radio 610 for an hour a day on the Odyssey app. And that can be live. It can be on Rewind. You can be listening to the Payne and Pendergast podcast or any of the podcasts. You could win a slam dunk trip to Vegas. It doesn't matter. Just listen for 60 minutes to us or any participating station in the Odyssey app to earn your daily entry. Then you and three friends could be wheels up to Vegas in March with an extra $5,000 in each of your pockets for the ultimate college basketball tournament experience. Just log in and listen now on the Odyssey app for your chance to win this national contest. Speaking of college basketball, I have a leader in the clubhouse for the dumbest statement by a head coach in 2025. That is next.
Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. With our biggest sale ever, furnaces from $39 a month, furnace and air conditioning combos from $59 a month, plus 72 months interest-free financing and up to a $4,000 system rebate. Four Seasons guaranteed to beat any competitor's price by up to $1,000 guaranteed. So call today for your free in-home estimate and same-day installation.
for all the right reasons. Call it 664 Seasons.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals, and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Seth, you had stepped away while I was reading that Slam Dunk in Vegas promo, so you didn't... I don't think you heard the tease, so I'll see if you agree with this. This is my leader in the clubhouse for the dumbest statement by a head coach in 2025 so far. Mm-hmm. I'm going to play this here. This was Archie Miller, who college basketball fans will remember as a media darling several years ago when he was the head coach at Dayton, and Dayton made a run to the Elite Eight. I remember that acutely because I was hosting the Triple Threat at the time with the venerable Dayton grad himself, Rich Lord, big Dayton guy. Yeah. Archie Miller would go on to be the coach at Indiana. He's now the coach at Rhode Island. And Rhode Island is in, I believe, the Atlantic 10. You know, they're in it's a lesser conference. So he was opining on just kind of how maybe some of the bigger conferences get more favorable coverage, that kind of thing. You know, it's not just a football thing. Happens in basketball, too. And he actually brought up the SEC. And here's what he said.
Difficult. I heard somebody say the other day, like, you know, the SEC is the best league in the country, but, you know, in all games, they're like 54 and 54. Somebody said that. I don't know if that's even accurate, but, like, do you know how hard it is in every league, you know, to win? You know, it's just hard to win any game.
Okay, so somebody had jokingly tweeted, like, yeah. The SEC is not that great. In the league, they're only 54 and 54.
They're 54 and 54 against SEC opponents, yeah. Right? Like, without a tie, the only way that it the only record you can have in any conference, right?
Okay, is a 500 record, yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah,
so
yeah.
He's
yeah.
citing this as, like, they're only a 500 league. They're 54 within and 54 since the beginning of the year.
I don't know. Maybe he was making the point that, like, no matter... It all boils down to what your level of competition is. There's high school leagues that are really, really, really hard to win within that league, you know, so that it's competitive everywhere.
I hate that you're giving him the benefit of the doubt.
What's that?
I hate that you're giving him the benefit of the doubt. He saw a stat that he thought backed up his point, which, you know what other league
that's
is
true,
54
that's true.
And 54 yeah. in their last okay, 54 no. games? Every
yeah.
league.
You're exactly right. Because, like, for him to think it was notable or something.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, somehow in his mind that if it were a really good league, then SEC teams would be...
80 and 20
or and 4 against other
against
SEC
themselves.
Teams.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like,
did you see the actual tweet that was
I did,
making a joke
I did,
about it?
I did. Oh, okay. Yeah, I did. I did because it's that video. The person who tweeted that out had that video. Like, I got him. You know, like, I got. I think they were just looking to get somebody, and they got Archie.
All right.
Miller.
Yeah. All right. I wanted to give the benefit of the doubt to Archie Miller.
Yeah. Yeah. No. He's.
I'm guessing he's not a big advanced stats guy.
Probably not. Probably not. Payne and Pendergast with you. Someone said, it's interesting, the text page, we were talking about the Senior Bowl, and someone said, hey guys, wish we wouldn't have drafted a tight end last year. Have you seen Elijah Arroyo from the University of Miami? I have. He's a really good player. I don't think drafting Cade Stover last year in the fourth round is going to prevent the Texans if they see a guy in, say, the second round, who they, especially not knowing who the OC is going to be, you know,
yeah.
If there's a really good tight end there that they think is a day one or day two pick, and he's the best guy. They drafted Blake Fisher last year in the second round with two highly paid starting tackles
on
the team.
Yeah, and I think it all depends on also what is an organization's philosophy in drafting guys at positions where you already have good players. I mean, people were surprised that the Texans drafted Blake Fisher in the second round this year because they already had two starting offensive tackles.
Yep.
And Nick said, look, you end up needing them. Hey,
and they did.
You know, now it is harder to keep four tight ends on the roster. So with Brevin Jordan coming back and Cade Stover coming back, that does get a little bit dicier. But I think if they really like a guy in the first two rounds, and that's where it is, if maybe the receivers that they like are already gone at pick 25 or in the second round, then I don't think that's a barrier. I mean, the one I always point to is that when when the Ravens drafted Jonathan Ogden, they already had two good starting offensive tackles.
Yeah.
But the Ravens forever have been a team that they, every year people say, well, no, the Ravens wouldn't do this because they have that player. Or, no, the Ravens wouldn't do that because of that. They don't care. They're the closest to genuinely taking best player available out of any team in the league. Every league claims they only take the best player available, and then lo and behold, they draft a guy who just conveniently is in a position of need for the team.
Yeah.
The Ravens really, really try to abide by taking the best player available.
Yeah, and it works all the time. That's what's so frustrating. Yeah. they draft him and they become great players for him.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, contributors. We were getting some reaction to the cut we played from the drive yesterday where they were talking about coaches to interview and, you know, maybe they're interviewing certain guys with the idea that maybe not for OC, but bringing them in some capacity. Got a few of these. Hell no to Eric Bieniemy for any coach on the staff.
I think with Eric Bieniemy, the whole thing is, I mean, it was kind of a hot button issue for a long time because it was, you know, there were other dynamics to it that people could grandstand about. I mean, the fact of the matter is he's interviewed in a lot of places. And since then, there have been a lot of black coaches who have taken positions that he either interviewed for or elsewhere. There's something that teams, it's above and beyond any dynamic like that, I think, at this point. The teams are not looking at him nearly as much or as often as they once were.
No, the market's spoken on Eric Bieniemy. You know, he's been several different places since Kansas City, and for whatever reason, his career is going backwards at this point, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't have a huge appetite for Eric Bieniemy on the staff as well. I would agree.
I wouldn't mind him on the staff. I just don't think that as an offensive coordinator.
No.
I don't think he's not on my wish list for offensive coordinator.
Definitely not.
I mean, you look at, okay, did Matt Nagy, that's the interesting question is, okay, Matt Nagy, how come he got an opportunity to come out of Kansas City where Eric Bieniemy didn't? I think that's fair, but also I point out that, yeah, Matt Nagy, I don't think he's the guy either unless he's working for Andy Reid under an offensive-minded. If we had Andy Reid as our head coach, hell yeah, bring Eric Bieniemy back in. But it's just that's not the situation you're in. You've got a young defensive-minded head coach, and that's where the standard has to be a little bit higher.
The tight end thing's getting a reaction. Get rid of Dalton. He can't block. Dalton, you're going to have to swallow some money to get rid of Dalton Schultz. There's good things Dalton does. I think, you know, the blocking thing was an issue. Last year, he seemed like a willing blocker. This year, he was not only not good at blocking, there were times where he's like, nah,
yeah,
I might block on this play. I don't know.
The one play that a lot of people noticed in the Chiefs game was where it looked like he was supposed to chip the defensive end.
Touched him.
And if any, it looked like Dalton Schultz pass rushed to the defensive end.
Yeah.
Because he actually, and I'm like, you never know exactly what his responsibilities are on that play. Maybe he was just supposed to show pass set real quick and then go. But he turned down the opportunity to even give him an elbow in the ribs.
Yes.
Yeah, like he moved his left arm actively out of the way. And the funniest thing about that was the defensive end. The defensive end in that situation usually would do something anticipating the chip block. And this guy just didn't give a damn about Dalton Schultz.
No.
His eyes were on Blake Fisher and Blake Fisher alone. He was not worried one bit about Dalton Schultz.
Yeah. Seth, I actually clicked on a mock draft yesterday. I know I said I wasn't going to do it until after the Super Bowl. But I clicked on one, and I have to admit something. And I don't remember whose mock draft it was. I think it was The Athletic. Two things I'm going to admit. It is nice having to scroll down to find the Texans because it means your team is relatively good. We remember the days where all you had to do was click the article and the Texans pick was pretty much right there, like one revolution of the mouse down. You could find them there at 2 or 3. It's nice to have to scroll down to at least 25. That's number one. Number two, the Texans in that mock draft were drafting a guard, Tyler Booker from Alabama, who I read, so I did a little studying on him, and apparently he's got a lot of Will Anderson kind of qualities. Like he'll do real well in those interviews. Like he's very swarmy, like that kind of thing.
We need more swarm-like offensive linemen. Yeah.
He seems swarmy, and that got me. I got excited about an interior offensive lineman in a mock draft.
I think that the dream scenario for a lot of Texans fans, I'm guessing. I don't want to be like these people that think that all the fans want to see a three-peat out of Kansas City or need to be shamed into wanting it.
Yeah.
I'm guessing the dream scenario would be wide receiver at 25, guard within the second round, mm-hmm. and you also have, after already having signed a guard in free agency. Ooh. Ideally, Trey Smith, the guard for the Chiefs.
So you're just overhauling that whole the brand new two guards.
You've got Trey Smith playing right guard, replacing Shaq Mason, and then you've got a guy in the mix at left guard who can compete for a job there, and just like that would be. That would feel pretty good. I would feel like, okay, they're really going after it and trying to fix the sore spots on this offense.
And then you got, what, a competition at center with Scruggs and Jared Patterson?
Yeah.
I mean, you probably can't.
Well, if they end up going to more of an inside zone and power and duo type of run game, like a more physical rushing attack, then, well, the other option would be a center in the second round, and Tytus Howard stays at left guard, actually. That might be... Okay. There's something there too. I'm intrigued by if they change the scheme, Tytus Howard at left guard, because he's just a big body to move, and he's got to clean some things up. But that's intriguing to me. But and then have actual genuine competition instead of penciling in Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green like they're made men.
Yeah.
In preseason.
Okay, so let's say call it wide receiver round one, interior offensive lineman round two. Is the dream scenario.
Yeah. Maybe it's a center. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you heading into the 8 o'clock hour.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Very clearly I'm saying that second rounder doesn't get to start right away.
Right.
You know, you don't just say, oh, he's Juice Scruggs. Oh, he's the next all-pro center. Throw him in there. Right.
Yeah, unless they're the best one. Payne and Pendergast into the 8 o'clock hour. What did we learn about the Rockets last night? Did we learn as much about them last night as we did beating the Celtics the night before? And Dana Brown speaks on the Ryan Presley and Alex Bregman situations. We'll hit all that heading into the 8 o'clock hour coming up next.